Welcome to Is This Scary? This is Shelby.
This is Zach.
This is Phil.
This time around, we are talking about John Carpenter's The Prince of Darkness, released in 87.
Woo!
Whoa. I think that went by a little too fast. We need to stretch this out for 9 minutes. Just like the movie did.
Yeah. So one of the more interesting points in the very opening of the movie is that I think it is, is it literally 9 minutes?
It's literally 9 minutes of credits broken up by, like, film. But there's almost, I think there's, like, one line of dialogue throughout all of the 9 minutes. Is this a silent film? What are we doing?
We are silently introduced to the plot and all the characters. But anyway, the background on this was, after the massive amount of studio interference on Big Trouble in Little China, John Carpenter got sick of the studio system. Said F you to all of them. He was like, I'm going back to my roots, so I'm going to make an independent horror movie because that's as far to my roots as I can go.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
So he wrote it, he directed it.
This was his baby.
After being just fed up with how movies are made.
Yeah, you can tell. And it has the same problem as we were talking about with the prequels for Star Wars. That, hey, some of the other ones, yeah. But no, hey, you know, you don't need to do all of your ideas. All of your ideas don't need to be in this one movie.
It's like, John, that's enough, John, slow down.
You could really tell that there weren't many people on this project that told him no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably because he was also in a, you know, state of mind not to be told no.
Right. I would be very curious to see what Donald Pleasance's point of view would be in this movie and how it went down. Is because Donald Pleasance was he was a British actor. He was very well respected, especially in the early films that he did with John Carpenter. So he was very, like, looked for his opinion. So I'm very, I would be very interested to see what his opinion of that film would be, because it was very vastly different from the other ones.
It was, but Donald Pleasance agreed to be in the movie because he had a lot of respect for Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
Because Carpenter had to open it with, independent project, I can't pay you much, but I want you to be in my movie.
Yeah, and I think that was mainly when you look at some of Donald Pleasance's, like, interviews about really any film, he was at that point in his life where he's like, I just want to work. You can pay me a little bit, give me a nice trailer, and I'll be fine with that.
And have a nice trailer. Nobody did. So, this one's interesting because obviously he had to get producers and other financiers. And one of the first guys he got on board, he met at WrestleMania 2. Because apparently, John Carpenter, Shep Gordon, and Alice Cooper, we'll get there, are all wrestling fans.
I love it.
Apparently, just as the story goes that we've been able to find by chance, Carpenter was sitting next to Gordon and Cooper. So Shep Gordon is Alice Cooper's manager. Shep Gordon also wanted to be a movie producer. So he did. Ta-da. I mean, I don't know. They sat near each other during the event. There's always plenty of downtime between matches, so they had time to talk. And mm-hmm. I guess it just came up.
And it was probably just Cooper just turning his head, and he's like, oh, that's John Carpenter.
Right.
And they just started talking, and Gordon was in the middle, and he's like, ooh, I see a plan starting here.
Actually, by that time, Shep Gordon had already produced films. Okay. So he already had his foot in the door.
So there you go.
Movies like The Duelist and Roadie with Meatloaf in it, and a few others, but it doesn't matter.
So you know what? Then I'm sure that's exactly how that conversation went. It would have been John Carpenter going, I'm fed up with the studio system, and Gordon going, aha, I can help.
Yeah. And you Alice can make was me just money. Like, and Cooper was just like, can I be in it too?
Because Alice Cooper is a self-confessed John Carpenter fan.
Yeah.
And he said that that's actually one of the high points of his life, is the fact that he can go, well, I was in a John Carpenter movie, were you?
Exactly. I love it. And he didn't care that he didn't say a word. He actually preferred that. And he he didn't care that his part was relatively small, but he enjoyed it.
I mean, he also appreciated the fact that Carpenter used his impaling device.
Yeah.
Which that was a great scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. It was a highlight.
I guess to go into the, I guess, quick plot synopsis. A priest dies, and he's clutching, like, a tiny little silver chest that's got a key in it. Huge, like, skeleton key. Donald Pleasant takes it and goes into a secret room in a basement, and
finds a whirling vortex of green goo.
Exactly. And surrounded by crosses.
Yes.
So it's very, very slowly we get an idea what is in the cylinder, but obviously get that idea that it's got to be evil because it's being protected or whatever. It's being guarded. Right. And it's been there for a very, very long time. So Donald Pleasant's character, who is
the priest,
he doesn't have a name, contacts and meets with a Professor Barrick or Barack.
He does, before he does that.
Mm-hmm. So B-I-R-A-C-K.
Byrack. Byrack.
Because they do say his name a couple times.
Yes.
But, okay, so before he gets in contact with Professor Byrack, we see the priest talking to a few cardinals. So even though this is not stated in the film, what you can parse out is he goes to his higher-ups, says, hey, there's something really bad going on. Please help. And they shoot him down, and so he goes to the world of academia instead.
Yes. And so when he goes to the professor just literally grabs people in from his class, like you got mathematicians, you got different types of scientists, and
linguists,
exactly.
Radiologists.
So, yeah, everything.
Oh, yeah. Who?
Yeah.
I love her. She's great.
Oh, and another professor, the guy that does the trumpet sounds.
Oh, yeah.
Getting all the snacks. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you end up with two college professors and, I guess, their best students.
Yes.
And they have...
It can't be the best students. Because who was the one? Who was the radiology person? Yeah, exactly.
Wait.
Sorry, running jokes.
So they put it out, they have from Friday night to Monday morning
mm-hmm.
to work on this because the professors have jobs. They are active professors and all these students are in college. So it's,
they have no life.
We have the weekend and then maybe we have next weekend. But it's, yeah. Look, man, we don't have a lot of time to help you.
Yeah. I mean, some of the students, like, they know what they're doing. Like, they've seen the cylinder.
And then
some of them have seen nothing other than they're just getting, like, slides and, like, test subjects and stuff like that.
Well, they're just getting results.
Yeah, so it's, everybody is very, very confused. And you can tell that some, like, know each other, some don't. There's a lot of flirting going on. It's just generic, like.
That is the one thing all the student characters do, just act like college kids.
Yes, and they're pretty genuine. Like, the nerds act like nerds. I mean, they're
all nerds.
Yeah, they true. But I was like,
I'm the jock of the nerds.
Exactly.
Still a nerd. Got it.
Says bushy man with uneven mustache.
Oh, yes. No.
All of us notice, and it's very... Once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Mm-hmm. And you'll see it immediately.
Uneven mustache.
His mustache is trying to run away from one side of his face.
Great. They also, the setting of this film is they are in a church in the middle of nowhere, Los Angeles, like I think Chinatown. So they're surrounded by decaying buildings and homeless people, which comes into effect later.
In fact, the church they're in is decaying itself.
Exactly. Now it's still, it's actually a theater now, but it's, yeah. It's,
that church has a lot of really cool history behind it.
It does.
Once they find out, get a better idea, especially with the book, not so much the cylinder, they find out that this is a mixture of science and religion, and that this container holds the son of Satan.
Nope.
Holds Satan,
the son of the anti-god.
Yes.
And remember, they also find out that Jesus Christ is in fact a space traveler who was executed for heresy after trying to warn people on Earth about the vessel in which Satan was trapped.
Right.
Hear me out. You need someone to tell you no at some point in time.
Yeah, because at this point, Carpenter was really into quantum mechanics and things of that nature. And one of the big tenets of quantum mechanics is that everything down to the smallest particle has an exact opposite. And so John applied that to literally everything. Well, but if there's a good and loving God, then there has to be a dark, evil, hateful God.
Mm-hmm.
And he's somehow trapped in another dimension through a mirror, and only Satan can get him out.
Bound to the world, to the realm of antimatter.
Which is accessed through mirrors.
Because reasons. Both are valid answers.
Science.
Kinda.
Right.
I mean, there was definitely a science book thrown at this movie plot.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem. It's, when you watch the behind the scenes stuff, you see John Carpenter, he was apparently reading 3 different books on quantum mechanics and string theory, etc., etc., at the time. So he was reading this real dense, complex science stuff, which leads to a real dense, complex movie. It's not always the most enjoyable, yeah. Unfortunately.
If I'm going to be honest, I feel like that's a good place to stop on the plot synopsis, as we leave all of the fun that does happen in the movie, like all of the deaths and everything,
mm-hmm.
up for the people to watch.
Yes.
Yeah, go watch it.
Yeah, since this is a lesser known, I would. It's worth a watch at least once. It's not a bad movie. It's interesting, and Carpenter tries to stuff way too much into the runtime, but it's a good movie overall.
Yeah. I think out of the three of us, I have the least like positive opinion of this movie, and I still think you should go see it at least once.
Mm-hmm.
I found, personally, that the beginning of it was very interesting, the end of it was very interesting, and then there was a middle section that exists.
It's a slow burn in the middle.
I don't mind slow burns, but yet again, they're just packing so much in. They just keep packing it. It's just like...
Yeah.
Well, it felt like school rather than...
Yeah, to a point.
Yeah, and it didn't, I mean, one thing that John Carpenter does, and it's build tension. This was very subtle with that. It's not like The Thing where it's right off the bat you feel the tension.
And it's not like Halloween where every time the shape is on screen, you are just waiting for him to act or do something. Like, there's not that... The cooked intention that he has in some of his other movies isn't there.
Yeah. Like, he does, I guess, subtle things. Like, the soundtrack is actually very similar to The Thing, because it's just that boom, 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 like, kind of heartbeat, but it's mixed in a different way.
Well,
it's not, like, foreboding. It's kind of just, like, you're waiting for something.
Well, it's actually a very unique soundtrack. Because there aren't separate pieces in it, really. Because Carpenter didn't know what the music was going to be. After he finished the movie, and they were done editing it, he wrote the soundtrack. And it is basically one long track, almost all the way through the movie.
Good thing you said almost, because there's one track on it that only gets played for a short period of time that he did not write. Because Alice Cooper wrote it. And I believe that, if I remember properly, that was when they used the impaling.
Yeah.
It was.
Which is also the last time you see Alice Cooper in the movie.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Right. And that track, let's just go ahead and hit it. It's also called The Prince of Darkness. Although, I guess the music industry was weird at this point, because that single did indeed get released an entire year after the movie was out. So if you're going to be timely with that release, they blew it.
This was definitely a film, one of the first films where none of us had seen it.
Yeah, this actually might be the first one for the podcast where none of us had seen it.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
And I guess, what was our favorite part? We'll go with that. of the film?
The existence of Alice Cooper.
Okay.
In all honesty, for me, not just because I'm an Alice Cooper fan, but because I found when he was on the screen, that was when the most tension was there.
Mm.
When he had him and his posse of homeless people, I felt like that built a lot of tension. And it's specifically because you could walk past them. They were just standing there staring at you until they did things.
Right, because... So Alice Cooper is literally just either... His character basically has two names. He's either the street psycho or the leader of the street people, depending on what you're looking at. And that's it, because they have him just covered in white cake makeup, and he's like, all right, stand there and look pissed off and menacing. And that's what he does, and it is very effective.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got his one, and then he's got the most visceral kill in the movie.
Yeah.
As well.
And that goes into kind of my favorite thing was the effects in this film. That blood looked great.
It did.
Yeah, and that's one thing. It looked like blood. Yeah, it looked like, it's very drippy. Very, very drippy. How
it wasn't your, like, Italian or Japanese super bright red. And then it wasn't the American super
thick corn syrup. Yeah, it was, this was very loose. Very similar to what blood would be like. It was a lot darker, but that's because also it was at nighttime when this shot was done. So it makes sense. It's not going to be that like bright red.
And he did all of those effects with a budget of $3
million. Yep.
Which, when put into perspective, that's not a big budget at all.
Especially not when you take into account the fact that they had to rent all the equipment. They hired a large cast,
rent the property,
pay everybody that worked on the movie. Like,
yeah,
the money runs out fast.
Yeah.
I was gonna say my favorite part would have to be the bug guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that a lot, and I'm not gonna spoil exactly what happens, but they do just have this effect for this scene where they put a voice effect on one of the actors, and they have the "Got news for you. Not gonna like it. You should pray for death." And then his head falls off, and it's great. And then his body just kind of falls apart. Now, obviously, it was a mannequin that they dumped a bunch of cockroaches on, but it looked really good. They did it in a very inventive way.
Mm-hmm. A lot of creepy crawlies in this movie.
There are a lot of creepy crawlies in this movie. Like the one homeless woman that has the ants just crawling everywhere, mm-hmm. including on her face, which,
yeah.
Kudos to that actress. I wouldn't have done that shot.
Yeah.
Especially can we those, put ants on your face?
No. Especially those big black ants? No. They call bite.
So, talking about favorite parts, what's your least favorite part?
I mean, probably the scenes where we watch people do research.
So the middle part of the movie. Got it.
Or when we watch Tina translate from the ancient book for like literally 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it is literally just her looking in the book going, okay, right. great. She's an ex, she can type real well and mm-hmm. read at the same time. But
move on.
Let's go.
Yeah. Mine, I guess, would be Donald Pleasence's character, because I feel like he's kind of there. I was just like, I was expecting kind of that, it's kind of generic. It's like, oh, the priest, like anytime, like Satan, he would be very outspoken, because obviously they're talking about religion, so he would be a lot more outspoken than the professor is, because I feel like the professor talks a lot more than Donald Pleasence does, and for a period of time, Donald Pleasence's character kind of just disappears.
Well, so does the professor, and what we end up finding out about them is they went and found an office. And they've just been talking.
Probably been drinking the whole time. I wouldn't be surprised.
It's very possible.
I guess also the other thing that I had a problem with, but it I kind of go back and forth between I like it and I don't like it, was the lighting. I like classic Carpenter when he uses darkness. This movie is too bright, in my opinion. But after really taking a few days, taking a whole week and really thinking about it, it makes sense why it
was so... It's a research situation. You have to be able to see stuff.
Yes, and it also gives that figuratively... It's good versus evil. So the cylinder is surrounded by light. Light is a symbol of good. And then also at the same time, it's surrounded by crucifixes too. You gotta light the area to make it look nice. So it's like, okay, it makes sense why it would be so bright. But it's like, I want more darkness though. We get it at the end, but it's like, it's kind of more of a spoiled brat thing for me. So I want more darkness, okay?
Well, yeah. Well, I was gonna say for me, as much as I agree with you, Zach, that's my least favorite point. I don't want to talk about that again. One of the other parts that I'm not particularly a fan of is actually at the end of the climax when you have the priest throwing that axe into the mirror. I'm sorry, you can't throw that axe with one hand. You can't.
That's a fire axe.
Yeah, you can't do it. And it's one of those things is. We've gone axe throwing before. I've gone axe throwing multiple times in the past. You can't. That's not the kind of axe you throw. You can't do it with one hand. It kind of kills kind of the immersion for me a little bit.
That's fair.
That's the thing about oddball about this film. A lot of things that we don't like are things that would actually be realistic in what's going on. Not so much the axe throwing, because that's not realistic.
No.
But the lighting would make sense, because they got to have light in order to see what they're looking at and what they're researching. The amount of characters that are in this movie, I don't like, because it's really confusing, because half the people, I don't even know what their names. I don't even think they have names. But it's so confusing to get an idea of who's who. But in a research situation,
you need a team.
Yeah, you're going to have like almost 20 people researching this thing. So
they do all have names. Five of them, though, have a first and last name.
Okay.
The rest of them only have one name.
Got it.
I mean, one of the things I also liked was the way they did the mirror scenes. Because there are a few scenes where things go in and out of mirrors. And by this time, they were way out of money.
Mm-hmm.
So they did something very risky.
Yeah.
So on the rented camera crane, they literally drained the mercury out of the crane, which is essential for its safe operation, so it doesn't just collapse, and they used it in shots. So they drained and replaced the mercury in a crane that they didn't own, which is ballsy.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of stupid, but it worked.
Yeah.
And it actually looked pretty cool. Although, the way the anti-god was portrayed, I don't want to spoil anything. Kind of cheesy.
I would have liked to have seen nothing.
It would have been better.
I would have liked
Or just like, hand and an arm that were basically just like a black.
Yes.
You know, an absence of light.
Yeah, almost, or even just... You could tell the other person was holding something, but you physically could not see it. Almost like he is invisible to our world, but you could obviously see indentations on the other person's hand that he's there. I think that would have been cool, but again, that probably would have needed... You wouldn't really be able to do makeup with that. You would have had to have used special effects for that. But I like the simple idea of just like a black arm and hand would have been cool.
I was going to say, so... We wanted to talk about the legacy of this, because this is one of those movies that, like we said, is not super popular in the horror community, but it is popular in one particular fandom. John Carpenter fans. They, like, hardcore John Carpenter fans love this movie.
Yeah.
I found on, like, multiple deep dives I was able to find on YouTube and articles on the internet and stuff, the people that are... really, really, really into Carpenter's stuff. This is a lot of people's favorite because, again, this is written, shot, and scored by John Carpenter. This is about as much John Carpenter as you can get in a movie.
Yeah.
And there were very few people telling him no, so this is directly his ideas and the way that he wanted to do things. From that point of view, it's one of those movies that has inspired other people to not be afraid to put their ideas onto film, for better or worse. But it is a inspirational movie in that aspect, that without the studios, without a whole lot of money, you can make a functional horror film.
But to be fair, horror is one of those genres that have always been perpetuated by the budget, low budget movies and the indie movies more than any other genre, in my opinion. Like, most of our favorite movies, or ones we enjoy the most, Evil Dead, for example, is a incredibly low budget movie. I
think 15 to 20 grand,
yeah, total. And some granola. They had some granola. That was in the budget. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, that's something that is perpetuated, and this definitely helped that. It showed a major director just following the same road that so many smaller ones do.
What's also interesting about this is John Carpenter stated that I'm not gonna make a run-of-the-mill cookie-cutter horror movie. He did not. This is, none of those things can be said about it. This is not it's not a pedestrian horror movie. You've probably not seen a lot of horror movies that feel like this.
Mm-hmm.
It also might be a good thing, because it's, again, this is not everybody's cup of tea. I promise. No.
And that says a lot when we're talking about the genre that's not everybody's cup of tea.
Well, but this is...
No, I get it, yeah.
But this is also... Like, the thing has a very negative ending, because the connotations that are set forth is, okay, you postponed the apocalypse, but by the end of the century, it's going to happen. So you put off the apocalypse for, like, a decade and some change.
Yeah.
But it's either going to have to be prevented again, or it's just going to happen.
I mean, to be fair, this is the second movie in his apocalypse trilogy.
Right, movies that definitely leave you with the feeling that, with the thing, everybody in the film dies, and that hopefully prevents the apocalypse, and then this one is, hopefully the actions of the characters in the film prevent the apocalypse. But maybe not.
The third one in the series is The Mouth of Madness.
I haven't seen that one.
I have not seen that one either.
Okay, so that's probably going to be our next movie for our John Carpenter spotlight, just because I like the loose theme between all three of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Can we start off with The Fog?
Well, but we already did The Thing.
We did.
So we will have talked about
all three
of the movies.
Yeah.
Let's go into horror news! So...
Well, okay, this isn't horror news, but this is outside of the podcast.
Right.
Subject. I wanted to talk about Morbius a little bit.
Okay.
Because it's interesting that this is now the first official quote-unquote MCU flop. Because even though some of the movies, like the Thor sequel, didn't do great, but it wasn't horrible, it still made money. And I know this is a Sony picture, but they're using Marvel characters.
Mm-hmm.
This one is bomb.
Yeah.
Morbius is not making its budget back. It was also put on the shelf for 2 years.
Yeah. I had a feeling that this film was, because they just kept on pushing it back. I mean, I've gone to in the last, like, 2 months, I've gone to the movies, I think, probably about 3 times, and I felt like I saw the trailer every single time. I was like, I'm tired of seeing the Morbius trailer. Is it ever gonna freaking come out? No? Okay.
Well, but I mean, they wrapped that movie before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And then they finally put it out, and it didn't do well. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think part of it is Jared Leto. I don't think he was the right actor for the spooky living vampire. Like, that just doesn't feel like his cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, none of us are big Jared Leto fans. Or at least,
really?
I don't want to speak for you, Shelby. Are you secretly the biggest Jared Leto fan?
No.
Well, my other thing is he's a hardcore method actor, which I just find to be ridiculous. It's, oh, so you can only get in the character once? Well, you're not a very good actor, are you? All right, anyway.
I guess Big Horror News came out, saw it on sci-fi.com, no sponsor. that the Conjuring universe will be bringing us a sequel to The Nun. I have mixed feelings about it because I loved The Nun in Conjuring 2, but The Nun movie was a flop.
It was a bad movie.
It's my hope is that they do not give all the scares away in the trailer. They need to do better by the trailer. And then it looks like Poppy's Playtime, which is a relatively new horror game. It's kind of like a very similar to Five Nights at Freddy's. I've watched the screenplay for it, or just like the gameplay for it. It is scary, but it doesn't have enough allure for it because a lot of people are developing a film adaptation of it. And my problem is that it's too new. It does not have enough lore in it, like Five Nights at Freddy's, to earn a film yet. I mean, this game just came out. There's nothing to it. And it's a relatively simple and it's short. It's a short game.
Well, and it's a one of the ones released in sections. So
right, section one is out. Section two has been announced.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's the second part of this game isn't even out yet.
So, for me, I purely found this interesting based off of one actor's name, Jamie Foxx, an individual I haven't heard of in forever. I see Zach was also looking at the same article I was. Is a vampire slayer in the new upcoming Netflix horror movie called Day Shift. It's supposed to be released August 12th, 2022.
That's cool.
And he is also the executive producer.
That's cool.
I have no issues with this. Vampire movies are fun. We haven't had a decent budgeted vampire movie in a while. This could be a lot of fun.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to
it. Wait, hear me out. The cast also includes Dave Franco, Steve Howie, Snoop Dogg. Yeah, I was just trying to add a few before I threw Snoop Dogg into that one.
I don't mean to sigh. Snoop Dogg is that. Snoop's not actually a bad actor. He's not. He's been decent in a few things.
Yeah.
D-O-double-G.
So they could probably, they could go two different ways with this film. They could actually genuinely make it a terrifying movie and surprise all of us. Or they could obviously do a comedy thing. Because just those two actors, Jamie Foxx and Snoop Dogg, they've done both. They've done serious movies and they've done comedy movies, so I think it's a potential,
and I could see it working either way, and I am fine with it. I find nothing negative about the mm-hmm. press release on this.
Also, Dave Franco is a fairly decent actor.
One that I don't know how it's gonna go down because there's not a lot of info on it, but Warner Brothers has opted Salem's Lot for a remake.
Woo!
So, that'll be a thing. If it goes the way of it, it'll be a polished, high-budget remake that is faithful to the source material. If that happens, it'll be a decent movie.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it will probably be garbage. And I don't see a lot of in-between. It will either be fun or bad.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have Stephen King adaptations. Last thing, Walking Dead fans. It looks like Melissa McBride is exiting looks like it was a planned Daryl and Carol spinoff series. So I'm not sure exactly why, but it looks like they were in the works of that, but she has exited the plans. So things could change, but in my opinion, I feel like Walking Dead is still big. But it's on the
it's
down.
Not relevant.
It's not relevant anymore, I feel like. Sorry, Walking Dead fans, but it's just, there's a lot going on for Walking Dead. You got the regular season, you got the Fear of the Walking Dead, you got the books or the comics.
The comics,
I mean,
yeah.
it's a lot, I feel like. But I don't know, I just feel like the hype is not as big as it was anymore. So,
never got into
I feel like it's too late. If they were going to do a spin-off series for these two characters, they could have done it a lot earlier.
Yeah, but then you had the spinoff running at the same time as the main show, and that's what they were obviously trying to avoid.
Conflicts, yeah, with filming.
Because the second you spin a character off into their own show, they're not on your main show anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they weren't going to kick Daryl off that show because he was the one...
The most popular character.
Exactly. The one that's not in the comics. Sorry, I read about half the comics because it... And it was, in my opinion, better. But,
I mean, from what I know of the comics, the Daryl-like character dies real early.
Yeah. To be fair, the writer of the comics even made the statement about this is not a zombie story. This is a story about people surviving an apocalypse. And I'm going to write it till I get bored of writing it.
Did the comic wrap yet?
I don't think it did. I could be wrong. I stopped following it because it was just
too much.
Yeah.
And then I know Shelby said one more thing, but one more thing.
And another one.
The Black Phone, which is one that we talked about before, is finally going to get its first release. So it's going to be screened for the first time at the Overlook Film Festival in New Orleans in June. We are not going to be able to go to that.
Yeah.
Bit bummed. We're going to have to wait for a theatrical release on it. But Black Phone is finally coming out. And again, we have high hopes for that one.
Yes.
It looks like a lot of fun.
Ethan Hawke can do a good... And I'd be very curious to see what they're going to do with this movie. My only hope is that they have released a trailer. There was mixed feelings when the trailer came out because people thought that they gave way too much away in the trailer.
So
and I kind of, I do agree with that as well. My only concern is if they're not going to release it to the film festival until June, my concern is in order to bring the hype back, they're going to do a whole bunch of TV spots and extended trailers. I don't want that. Just release the same trailer. I was like, that's all they need to do. They don't need to release anything extended because you're going to give way too much away.
Well, and the thing is, there might be a second ramp up when the theatrical release happens.
Exactly. And I'm like, I feel like a lot of people, because the trailer came out, I think, like last month or maybe January.
It was a while ago.
I feel that people probably don't really remember it that well.
Probably
so
not.
It's like, if you're obviously, if you're a big horror fan and stuff like that, you probably remember it relatively well. I pretty much remember it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the generic viewer is not going to remember it. So if they release another trailer in maybe like late May, early June, they'll be like, oh yeah, this movie's coming out. Okay, I'm excited again.
I don't know if they'll do it for the festival.
I
think they'll do it for the wide release.
Oh, yeah.
So, real quick, jumping, just to give this the answer. Walking Dead comic ended in 2019.
Okay.
Then that ran for, like, over a decade.
Ran from October 2003 to July 2019.
16 years.
That's the publication date.
Well, 15.
Yeah.
Some change, but still, that's... All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, again... So no Walking Dead spinoff, and we are pumped for The Black Phone.
Yes.
Outside of that, I know we spoke about this before, but it's come up. We're looking for opening and closing theme music, so if anyone can help us out, if you
play music
or know where we can get royalty-free spoopy music, we need some.
Yes. And let us know. We have been trying for the last couple episodes with different recordings, different setups, and sound. So let us know how it sounds. Because we're not perfect. We're trying. We're still new at this. We will never be perfect. But we want to get your opinion.
Yep. Because at this point, we are now using a new sound editor for the first time.
Yes.
So hopefully this is better.
Yay, fun.
But anyway, this is Zach.
This is Shelby.
This is Phil.
Stay spooky.